Welcome to Batescast, a series of podcasts delving into all things legal as we adjust to the new normal. When it comes to campaigning on social justice issues, symbols and flags have always played a key role in spreading the message and raising awareness. Today, we're looking at some of the interesting legal issues that can crop up around ownership of these images and to what extent it's helpful for creators to protect their intellectual property. I'm joined today by Matthew Healy, head of our branding and trademarks team, and Mindy Jitte from our dispute resolution team. Welcome both.
Hi, Karen.
Hello. So we've just had Pride Month in June and a variety of social justice campaigns in the headlines over the last year. What role have signs and symbols played in these movements?
So this is a really interesting question, and I started thinking about this a lot last month because the rainbow image was everywhere, and it was everywhere because of it being Pride Month in June. But actually, you can see that multicoloured image has got a variety of meanings nowadays. So for a long time, it's been associated with Pride, but actually this year, it's been refashioned as a symbol of Thank You NHS, which is a completely different campaign. And in addition to that, it's always just been a kind of fashion trend, hasn't it? You've always been able to buy, I don't know, rainbow symbols on clothing and so on.
Sure.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You see signs in the world that are in a similar category. And there's a conversation to be had about whether these count as brand or not. But they are things you see in the world and you associate them with a particular organisation or movement. And usually when we see these things, it's the name of a commercial product like Coca-Cola or BMW. But there's a whole nother category that are avowedly non-commercial in character. I remember growing up in the 70s and 80s and seeing the CND logo everywhere. And that held a lot of significance for me. And just recently, we've seen the Extinction Rebellion movement and their protests. And you'll actually notice that their logo in some ways isn't that different. And there might be a shared spirit between those two organizations. Three words that we're seeing a lot of at the moment in Black Lives Matter, which convey a message. But interestingly, from a lawyer's point of view, they're actually the name of an organization as well. So that brings into play issues around trademark law and whether, and if so, in what context that organization can claim a monopoly on those words. So there's all kinds of interesting things going on there.
Yeah. And Karen, you were asking about what role they've played in the movements. And I think when you consider the rainbow flag that's used for Pride, the whole reason that was invented in the first place in the late 60s, early 70s was to replace the pink triangle, which had always had quite a dark and oppressive history. And it was refashioned as this, you know, brightly coloured, uplifting, multicoloured flag, and as a symbol of power and freedom to really galvanise this Pride movement. And the key point about it is that it wasn't intended to be a commercial brand. It was supposed to be about campaigning, about community building. And actually what started to happen in more recent years is you've seen commercial companies jumping on that Pride bandwagon. There have been accusations of corporates and commercial entities, quote, rainbow washing to try and bolster their own image and perhaps get people to spend with them when they wouldn't have before on the basis of perhaps shared values. So there is this quite interesting kind of tension between the campaigning and community building aspect of it, which is just completely non-commercial, but the fact that this commercial element has snuck in.
I find the commercial element really interesting because it seems to me on one level to be slightly crass and slightly profiteering. If the net effect of that is that people are reminded that it's Pride Week or it makes them have a conversation about gay rights, it's hard to argue where the harm is in that, really. People might feel differently.
What are the main legal issues you tend to see when it comes to protecting intellectual property like this?
These signs and symbols, they are intellectual property, and protection can arise in a number of different ways. So the first thing to think about is copyright protection. That will cover any sort of artistic design, like a logo or a symbol. And the thing about copyright protection that's really interesting is that it belongs to the person who put pen to paper. It arises whether the artist wants it to or not. So you could have somebody who's got no interest in owning any intellectual property rights, but just by the very fact that they have designed something and created it means that they have got a right to prevent other people from copying it. So if they want to, they can enforce that right, but they don't have to. But the point is that the right does exist.
That's absolutely right. The fact is that you commit that act and copyright does spring into existence. And the only way of making that not the case is to die and wait 70 years. Now, in the case of the creator of the Extinction Rebellion logo, who's a East London artist, Bold Frog ESP, called himself, has been very clear that the symbol is available to those who wish to use it for non-commercial purposes. But there's a clear statement on their website that it cannot be used for commercial purposes, including fundraising. Clearly, Gold Frog ESP isn't a commercial kind of guy. And you can eschew the commercial aspects of the world. But that statement is fundamentally legal in character. It's given a limited permission to use the copyright work that he's created. And there's real scope for this to become a germane point down the line when someone does something with the logo or something that looks too like the logo that he takes exception to. In the last analysis, he would have to engage with the legal system and potentially threaten proceedings to stop that. Something that he would need to be mindful of is that he would have to say who he was at that point. Gold Frog ESP would not be able to file proceedings under that name.
Lots to consider there.
You might be a communist who believes there's no such thing as property, including intellectual property, or an anarchist who doesn't believe in the law at all. There have been situations where people have tried to disown copyright and things that they've created, and the CND logo is a really good example of this. So if you go on their website, it actually says, although specifically designed for the anti-nuclear movement, CND logo has quite deliberately never been copyrighted. Now, first of all, that's wrong. As I've explained, copyright comes into existence whether you want it to or not. It then goes on, no one has to pay or to seek permission before they use it. It is free for all. Those last expressions actually have legal effect. They amount to an authorization or a consent. And I think there are really interesting conversations to be had around the circumstances in which that authorization or consent could be revoked. Just for example, how would CND feel if an arms manufacturer started using the logo? Would they consider that grossly offensive? These are really interesting legal questions. And even though CND clearly aren't thinking in legal terms, there are moving parts here.
I think the other issue that comes up from a legal point of view protecting intellectual property rights is to do with trademarks. So a trademark is a brand that you recognise as belonging to a certain organisation. And like we were saying earlier, when you think about the Pride logo, the rainbow symbol, you find that everywhere in June, don't you? You see it on coffee cups, you see it on clothing and trainers in a specifically sort of Pride branded way. You can even get a mouthwash with a rainbow, and then you can buy your LGBT BLT in June as well, can't you? So what that's doing from a trademark point of view potentially is actually diluting out the brand, so that people then are not particularly clear about where it comes from or what it means. And I think it links back to what Matt was saying earlier about the peace logo, the CND logo, that actually if you find it used in too many places by too many different people, then actually what does it symbolise anymore?
Sure.
I think that's true. It just becomes completely generic and loses its power. You know, the Extinction Rebellion movement becomes more mainstream. Then that logo could well be appropriated in a similar way to Pride rainbow flags. And these issues may well become germane.
Yes, and then actually thinking about ownership, for some brands, it is obvious who owns it, as in who created it. But actually, when we were thinking about Black Lives Matter, for example, as a series of words, it's not particularly clear who's got rights in those words in sort of legal terms. And I think we have seen that there have been multiple applications filed at the trademark registry to try and establish ownership and registration of those words as a trademark, haven't there?
There have. There's around half a dozen applications filed in the UK. The very first one was filed by a guy who described himself as a businessman up in Manchester. And he said that he'd done it for charitable purposes with a view to controlling it and making sure that the expression didn't fall in the wrong hands. He also applied to trademark I Can't Breathe, which strikes me as in very bad taste. But that was picked up on by the press, and he's now withdrawn those applications. But half a dozen others have sprung up in its stead. One of the applications, for example, covers some soft drinks. And the whole point of obtaining a registered trademark is that you can, at the end of the day, block someone else using it.
Yeah, that's interesting. Coming back to this whole idea of ownership, let's say that someone has created a symbol for a campaign. They own it. They want it to be used widely to spread the message, but they might want to retain some control over how it's used. What are the options in this situation?
Well, I think there are a number of complexities here, as in literally there are different layers because there are moral considerations, legal considerations, commercial considerations. But I suppose for me, the bottom line is that actually, if you're going to create something and put it out there for anyone to use, then what you are doing is putting it out there for anyone to use. So that means whether you like the way they're using it or not. And as Matt said earlier, you can have guidelines, you can have consent for non-commercial use and try and restrict the way that, you know, the permissions that you give. But in many ways, once the genie's out of the bottle, it's out of the bottle.
Sure.
I think that's right. In more conventional circumstances and for more conventional brands, we would say to a client, if you want other people to use this brand, but you want a say over who uses it and how they use it, you would say, protect it as a trademark and enter into trademark license agreements with the various parties who you're happy to use it. And that needn't be something complicated. It's something you can sort of get on one side of a bit of paper. But again, something like the rainbow flag or Black Lives Matter, the reality is it does leave a bad taste in the mouth when people apply for those kinds of trademarks and seek those kinds of monopolies. They would absolutely have to have a conversation, how is this going to play? And we do, it's something that we get asked quite often. Someone will come to us and say, we want to monopolize this expression. Firstly, can we do it legally? But second, is it cool? Is this the right thing to do? Or is it the wrong thing to do? And am I going to get lambasted for it? So they're things that we see intermittently, and they're never easy questions, are they?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And actually, if you come down on the side of the fact that you don't feel it's right to have a legal monopoly over the sign or the symbol, then actually what you're doing is you're saying, actually, I'm not going to rely on a court to help me enforce my rights in this if I think it's being misused. Instead, what you're actually going to end up doing is relying on the court of public opinion, aren't you? And when a sign or a symbol that actually was designed for campaigning, for community building, for social movements has been used in a way that is not consistent with those values. So one more benign example of that, I guess, is when you've got a commercial company piggybacking off a social symbol. Perhaps actually at that stage, you as the creator of the movement, the designer of the sign and the symbol, can even take solace from the fact that your symbol has become so powerful that now everyone wants a piece of it. It's almost like it's transcended commercial, non-commercial considerations, potentially. But what I would say is that if actually, fundamentally, you are interested in enforcing your legal rights, then really you need to lock them down from the start. Because like we said before, once it's been used by people, then really it's out there. And also you have to consider the fact that if you want to enforce them, you've then got to invest time and effort and money in enforcing them through legal channels.
Were Extinction Rebellion to contact us tomorrow, I think my advice to them, you have to play the ball as it lies. And if they wanted to achieve the effect of this logo still being really distinctive of their organization, not used by imposters, the logo maintains its recognition and force by only being used in non-commercial contexts, however unpalatable it may or may not be to them, the only way you can really do that is by making sure your copyright ducks are in a row and registering a trademark and controlling it through the proper means and granting licenses when people come to you. Those licenses can be for gratis and for nothing. They can be on a non-commercial basis. But the law is the law, and that would be their recourse here. And if they want to have that effect, it is the one thing that with any surety will allow them to do that.
So what advice would you give?
If you find yourself in a situation where one of these signs, brands, whatever you want to call them, is in your hands, at least engage with these issues, even if only for the purpose of working out how you can spread the thing far and wide with the least inconvenience to people as possible. Your IP rights exist, whether you want them to or not, and that's something that you would need to think through and do the right thing in respect of it.
What would be your top tip to campaigners in this situation?
I suppose really it's about thinking it through from the outset, isn't it? There are pros and cons to however you want to play it, whether you want to go down the legal route or whether you don't. But the key thing is to choose one early doors and stick with it, because otherwise it will probably choose itself for you and then you'll be stuck with it.
Thanks both very much for joining me today. As always, if you'd like to learn more about any of the issues that we've been discussing today, there are plenty of free resources available on our website, bateswells.co.uk, where you can also find recordings of some of our recent podcasts. Next time, I'll be joined by Erica Crump of our Culture and Creative team to talk about how the arts sector has been weathering the recent crisis. From all of us here at Bateswells, we hope you stay safe.